Sports Roundtable, episode 133. And once again, as with every week, it is my absolute pleasure, privilege, and honor to introduce the man who makes Sports Roundtable possible every single week, the absolute animator, our captain, our initiator, our Superman, none other than Bob Bang Bang BB Guns Branco. Take it away, Bob.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome once again to Sports Roundtable, everybody. My name is Bob Branco, without all those adjectives, though I don't mind hearing them. Anyway, let me introduce. We have some noise in the background. Mute, please. Let me introduce the entire crew. We start out with Lynn Gagnon.
Hello.
Bob Hache.
Hello, everybody.
Al Hensel.
Hello, everybody.
And last, but certainly not least, we have Tom Dolly.
Good evening.
Good evening. Let me once again thank everybody for making it possible for Sports Roundtable to be aired. Thank you to all the media sources out there who do this. And of course, we want to thank once again Tom for putting our program up on Rosie's Place, room number 14. Thank you, Tom. And because he does this, it allows people such as Don Bowden to listen. So welcome, Don. How are you?
Pork chop.
Pork chop. Okay. Tom, before we introduce our guest, I would like to find out if you have anything from the mailbag, because our listeners are what makes the show go around, as well as the people on the panel.
I have nothing in the mailbag today.
All right. So, and if you would like to write us at Sports Roundtable and get answers to your questions from a coach's point of view, please do so at thecoach2aa@gmail.com. That's thecoach2aa, all one word, @gmail.com. We have a special guest today on our program, and he's here to talk about something that is really important to us, though we don't talk about it that often. But I think it's something that really benefits everybody health-wise. First of all, let me introduce him. His name is Gary Ziola, and he's going to talk to us today about power fitness.
Hey, Gary.
When it pertains to sports. Hi, Gary. Welcome to Sports Roundtable.
Hi there. Hello.
Thank you for being with us. Okay, so Gary, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this and tell us how it benefits us.
All right. The name of the sport, it's powerlifting is the name of the sport. And just to be clear, powerlifting is not the same as Olympic lifting. Olympic lifting is what you see during the Olympics, where they lift the weight over your head, which is the snatch and the clean and jerk. Powerlifting involves the squat, the bench press, and the deadlift. And none of those lifts do you lift the weight over your head. The squat is basically a lower body exercise, the bench an upper body exercise, and the deadlift pretty much works every muscle in the body, uses both the lower and upper body. All right, so that's the, you know, the three basic lifts. I could describe the lifts more if you think I need to, but if anyone's ever lifted weights, they should have some idea what the lifts are, especially the bench press. Anybody who's ever lifted weights has done bench presses. Now, I got involved in the sport basically going all the way back to the 70s when I was growing up. I was lifting weights in my parents' basement. And my first, you know, I was lifting weights in my parents' basement, and I entered a bench press meet when I was a junior in high school. This would have been 1978. And I promptly bombed out of the lift, which is say I didn't successfully complete a lift, mainly because I did everything wrong at the time, because I really had no idea what I was doing. I said I was just working out by myself in the basement. But after that, I joined the gym, learned how to do the lifts correctly, entered the same meet a year later, won a trophy at the meet, and the meet director said if they had a most improved lifter trophy, I would have won it, you know, easily. In case after that, then I went on to college and continued then to compete in what would be a full power meet, which is, say, all three lifts, squat, bench press, and deadlift. I was national collegiate champion in 1981, 114-pound weight class. I should mention I'm 5 foot. Well, I was 5 foot one. I'm now 5 feet tall as I've gotten older. But I was 5 foot one. I competed 114-pound weight class and won my national collegiates in 81. In 82, I moved up to 123s, and unfortunately only took second at national collegiates. But I also won state collegiates both years, held every state collegiate record at that time in both weight classes, plus one national collegiate record. But then unfortunately after that is when I began to have some health problems that forced me out of the sport for many years. I didn't compete again. Well, actually, I competed. My last contest was in 82. Then I entered a couple bench meets in 85. I didn't compete again until 03. And so it was like 21 years that I didn't compete in a full power meet. And then I competed from 03 through 09. And again, health problems forced me to stop competing. I started competing again in 15, and I've competing since then. Except my last contest got canceled for, I'm sure you can know why it got canceled. It was supposed to be on April 4th. You know, so I've been competing on and off for literally decades, entered dozens of different contests. So that's kind of my background. So I've been in it a long time at this point. So I'm not sure what else you want me to explain about the sport. I could go on forever about the details on the sport, training, what a competition is like. Because when you say lifting in a contest is far different than lifting weights in a gym. And it's also even training for powerlifting is a lot different than just training just to get in shape. Because it's very specific goals and it's very specific on how the lifts have to be performed. And I should mention, too, when I'm talking about the lifts, you're talking about lifting the weight one time. That's it, not doing multiple reps like you generally do in a gym. It's called a one rep max, one RM. So you're only lifting the weight one time, as much weight as you possibly can lift. You know, and over the years, you know, I've changed considerably. Obviously, I never got back to doing as much as I did back when I was in college. Since I started lifting in my 40s back in the O's, and now in my 50s, and I'm pushing 60 now. I'm 59 now. You know, so at this point, I'm training. I'm hoping to enter a contest in September if it's available. But, of course, who knows what's going on right now with everything. You know, but fortunately, I have a home gym, so I've been able to keep training despite all the lockdowns and closures and all that. You know, so I'm training. I could enter a contest anytime as soon as the gym's open and meets could get scheduled here.
Gary,
so let me say without...
I have a question, Gary. This is Al. So in regards, just beyond the obvious, since you started weightlifting, weight training, conditioning, it's obviously become a tremendous lifetime tool for you. Since the 70s, how get to where you are now, almost 60, per your admission, how would you say beyond the obvious, it's helped your life right now at this point?
Well, let me say, like I said, I actually have a whole list of health problems, which is one reason why I set up the home gym, and that's so hard to explain. But let me say, without lifting weights, my health would be absolutely terrible.
Okay.
It's lifting weights, staying in shape, that has enabled me, like I said, at 59, despite a lot of health problems, to keep going and keep functioning. And that's one reason why I've been so outraged about all the closures of gyms that have been going on.
Absolutely.
Because if I had been, you know, if I had been dependent on a commercial gym and I haven't been able to lift for the last 2.5 months, my health would have collapsed on me by now. I know that beyond any doubt. And well, also tied in with...
This is one of the reasons I brought you on the show, Gary, because with the pandemic, a lot of gyms are closed. And this is something that would benefit anybody who is idle, that even if they have to get their own equipment and do their own exercises in their own homes, this would be something to occupy their time and keep them healthy.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been saying all along throughout this pandemic, that you're much less likely to suffer severe consequences from a coronavirus infection if you're healthy and in shape versus out of shape. And the statistics bear that out. People are overweight. We have hypertension, diabetes, or the ones who primarily have serious problems with it. If you don't have those risk factors, and there's a few others like the list, but most of them are related to lifestyle, diet, exercise, along with stress control and proper sleep. You know, if you take care of those four areas of your life, that you're generally healthy, have a strong immune system, most likely, no guarantees in life, but most likely, if you do get infected, you're not going to have serious problems. That's why even at age 59, which is kind of the borderline between what they consider older and, you know, you're more likely to have serious problems from the coronavirus. You know, I'm not too worried if I get infected. In fact, I was sick a few weeks ago, but I don't know if it was the coronavirus or not because I wasn't able to get tested at the time. So maybe I did have it, maybe I didn't. Probably it was just a mild case of the flu. But I just don't know. But I did get over it within 4 days. I was completely recovered. So even if it was just the flu, that's still quick time to get over the flu. You know, even though, like I said, I'm 59 years old. Most people get the flu, you're sick for a week or two. You know, so that's the difference if you stay in shape. And the other thing I do want to mention is my lifting gives me incentives to watch my diet. Because I know if I eat healthy, eat a proper good diet, and I know at this point I'll best to eat, that it helps my lifting, but that also helps my health in general. If you take away my lifting, then I know I'd get more lax on my diet, and then that would, again, snowball in the health getting worse.
So, Gary, you know, another question then, along those same lines, thinking back to the 1970s when you first began to get into weight training, were you motivated at all by your health condition, or was your health okay at that time?
No, my health was okay as a kid, basically. It wasn't health problems that got me lifting.
Okay.
It was mainly just the desire. Well, to be honest, I'm only 5'1".
Mm-hmm.
So at 5'1", I was getting picked on.
Yeah, sure.
You know, as a lot of kids do.
Yeah.
So I joined a wrestling team and learned how to wrestle, and I began lifting weights in order to get stronger, in order to be able to stand up to the bullies, and frankly, it worked. Because there was more than one occasion in high school and in college where I had some guy a lot bigger than me trying to pick on me, and I stood up to him and got in a few fights, but always at least came out even in the fight, which was enough to get the bully off my back. That was probably one of the biggest reasons I began. The best way to deal with the bully is to stand up to him.
So the main emphasis then, Gary, would be in this instance here on our Sports Roundtable venue is the importance of staying physically fit, especially when, you know, one might have health complications and be a little bit on the high middle age side. It's always good to stay as fit as possible. And hopefully, you know, some governors, friends of friends of friends of governors, get wind of this show along with other people, I'm sure, giving their input and, you know, be reminded that gyms really do play a hugely important part in one's maintaining of good health and mental well-being.
Yeah, that's, you know, like I said, I've been writing a lot about the coronavirus on my politics website, and that's a point I've been making since day one and continue through today. Because here, I live in Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh, and our gyms are still closed, but they just opened today in Ohio, which, of course, is a neighboring state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but ours are still closed, and I have no idea when Governor Wolf is going to open them. And this is a point that's been really getting to me, because I did hear a report on the news of a survey that found that 47% of women and 22% of men report gaining weight since all the lockdowns began. You know, and that, I mean, that's terrible. Because again, being overweight is one of the biggest risk factors for having serious problems from an infection. Yet people are gaining weight because they're being stuck inside. It's really counterproductive. In my mind, exact opposite of what we need. We need to be encouraging people to exercise.
Gary, they also say that if you're stuck in the house for 30, 40, 50, 60 days, however long we've been stuck in. Not that I've been literally stuck in the house. I do go outside. But for those of you out there who have been really stuck in the house, in my opinion, it does not at all help your immune system. That's
no,
my own.
No, it definitely. Yeah, it definitely doesn't help. It doesn't help mentally. And again, stress is another thing that weakens the immune system. And a lot of people are under stress just out of boredom. And again, bored and then feeds into eating junk food and even eating disorders because you're, you know, you get bored. So you start eating junk food. And drinking alcohol, and that's where a lot of other problems develop.
It's a vicious cycle.
You know, again, that's, yeah, it's a cycle downward, and it really is wrong-headed. You know, like, and especially now, you know, we know, you know, most recent evidence is being outside, you're much less likely to get infected if you're outside than inside, which is why the closing of parks like we've had around here, not in all places, but some places have closed garden shops, which is really ridiculous, you know, and beaches, you know, you're, you know, even like these pictures this weekend of beaches being crowded, you know, really didn't bother me that much because when you're outside in the sun, you're not that likely to get infected, you know, though it, you know, I would prefer to see the people a little more spaced apart, but beyond that, it's not, you're better off outside than inside. You know, now as far as gyms go, there is a way to have people socially distance in a gym. And I saw it on the news, you know, on the news on TV where they were interviewing a gym owner had opened a gym. But he literally measured out all the equipment in the gym and put marks on the floor where the equipment goes. So everything was 6 feet apart, you know, made sure he disinfected everything so people could come in, work out, and always be 6 feet away from each other. But Governor, this was in New Jersey, Governor Murphy still had the thugs go in there and close the place down. And I think the gym owner is in jail now because of that. But there was no reason for it. I mean, the equipment was spread out. You could see in the pictures, people were not going to be too close together. So there was no reason to shut it down. You know, and that's why if you look like Governor DeSantos and Kemp and George and Ford and Georgia, when they opened the beaches, people were screaming about them opening the beaches, but that was weeks ago, and they haven't seen a spike in their cases, even though the beaches have been open and people have been congregating on the beaches. Again, you're not that likely to get infected if you're outside in the sunshine. You know, now my sport, of course, powerlifting, we are inside, you know, and that's why, you know, I could see, that's why I've been thinking what's going to happen when I have a corn test. You know, obviously powerlifting is a non-contact sport, but you do get close together, you know, in the, it was close together at some points in the warm-up room. And when you're actually performing the lift, you got spotters around you and the judges around there. So I could see you probably could spread the judges out a little further, but the spotters are going to have to be close to the lifter. But of course, I could wear masks if those do any good. Now, I can't see how the lifters could wear masks. There's no way I'd be able to lift. There's no way I'd be able to pull a max deadlift with a mask on. You know, I've almost passed out a couple of times at contests pulling a max deadlift. My final deadlift, and even on benches, I almost passed out once. There's no way I'd be able to wear a mask. You know, if it reduces your oxygen, I'd pass out. So that you can't do. But you could have the judges and spotters and scorekeepers all wear masks, you know, and again, just those people could be spaced out and the audience could be spaced out and just limit the size of the audience. In fact, my contest on April 4th, you know, up until, when was it, March 16th, when the president announced the 10-person gathering ban, we were still going to have the meet. We had no plans to cancel it up until that day, but as soon as he announced that, I was actually warming up for my workout whenever I was listening to the president and he announced that, and I knew that and that's it. That was the end of my contest. But up until then, we had planned on doing it. I just had talked to the meet director, and she said, you know, we had talked about just limiting the size of the crowd and disinfecting the equipment, but otherwise we were ready to go. And again, we're talking about powerlifters here. Guys who, and girls, there are women powerlifters, a lot of them, you know, that are in shape because we're working out, we're in shape. So they're, you know, she said she had nobody had planned on canceling coming to the contest because of the virus up until, you know, that happened. And at that point, it had to be canceled. You know, but, you know, we're confident we're all in shape. If we get infected, you know, it'll be like the flu and you'll get over it. Is how pretty much they're all taking the attitude. Because again, because they're all people who have been in shape and been working out, much in the diet, so it isn't that big of a risk for people in that category.
I do want to see if Bob and Tom and Lynn have anything to ask you.
Right. Yeah, I first of all, I want to echo Gary's feelings about working out and the importance of working out and the importance of being in good shape. I am interesting because I love to eat. That's my biggest weakness. But I also like to work out and exercise. So I have had periods of time when I was overweight, but I would still work out and I could still, I do things like balance ball. I do some resistance Pilates and a little bit with weights as well. And, now lately I've been suffering with cancer, which the rest of the crew knows about.
Mm-hmm.
And I value working out even more now when I'm feeling better. It's great to work out. And if I think working out has helped me to fight the cancer, absolutely. And by the way, I recommend that people go outside. I go out for walks regularly. I've been doing it since they declared this so-called lockdown. I have not been staying inside. I mean, I don't go out and visit with people and a lot of stuff like that. And certainly I'm keeping my distance from people, but I try to make it a point to get out for walks and spend at least part of every day, unless the weather's terrible, out of doors. I think the outdoors is a lot better for you than the indoors, just like you guys do, Gary. And, I mean, we need to be careful with the virus. I actually kind of agree with you about the gyms, too. I think that as long as people behave themselves and don't act like those yahoos in Wisconsin that were at a bar, you know, high-fiving it and getting close together and all that kind of stuff, if people behave themselves, there's no reason why we can't reopen gyms.
I just wanted to mention.
In most areas, yeah.
H, and everybody else, everybody listening as well, you know, I try to grab a couple of hours worth of news every day, and I've been noticing that there are a lot of folks coming on the news venue I watch, Fox and Friends, which is, I think, a really good venue because they mix it up a lot, and they put a lot of stress on getting things going in a responsible way. And one of the things that they do, they have a lot of gym owners on, and they actually show the insides of their gyms at times, and they show what they do to be precautious, to social distance, to follow the CDC guidelines. I mean, these folks love the people. And Gary, I think this is where you can sort of chime in if you wish to on this. Gym owners, gym folks who run gym operations really do care about the people who come in. And in fact, right now, I'm hearing a lot of situations where, as part of the sort of following the CDC guidelines and being precautious, they're not letting new members in because they don't know where they come from. They don't understand how they're, you know, they're going to treat their venue. Will they abuse being in a gym? And so they really care about the people who come in. They don't want them sick any more than they want themselves sick. So they're taking every precaution possible to follow the CDC guidelines. And for the most part, it seems to be working out okay.
Yeah, well, I agree. I should mention, back in the 70s, when I went to college, I actually majored in nutrition science. Because at that time, my plan was to open a gym and do what is now called personal training. At that time, that wasn't even a term. But that was my plan, was to open up a gym and personally, you know, work with people and train them. And I got the degree in nutrition so I could counsel them in both diet and then, you know, my own knowledge of training from powerlifting. Although, in retrospect, I probably should have double majored in nutrition science and exercise physiology. But in any case, yeah, but that would have been my attitude, that you get to know the people, you know who's coming into your gym, you know what their goals are, so you can work with them individually, and then that's why I can see why you're saying they're not letting new members right now, because they want to stick with the people they know they can trust, they know they're coming there for a serious reason and aren't just going to be goofing off and causing problems.
Yep.
So, yeah, and again, if you're a good gym owner, you know your members, you know, because you've actually talked to them and worked with them, or if you have other trainers, you know, you get to know the people. So I know that when I used to work on a commercial gym, at least I'd get to know the people who came in at the same time as I did. you know, you kind of, you know, people tend to have the same schedules, so you know the people that come in. So yeah, but yeah, I mean, that type of situation, that's, like I said, that's the situation. The same thing here, there was a gym that opened up actually a couple weeks ago, even though they weren't allowed to, but they're doing the same thing. They had people social distancing, asking if they could wear masks when they could, although, like I said, I think wearing masks when you work out really doesn't work out that well. But they were social distancing, disinfecting the equipment, but then the local newspaper had to run an article about it, and so now the authorities knew about it, and I think they got shut down.
Yeah, I know.
Which I don't know why they ran the article.
There was, there was a gentleman in Massachusetts recently. His name is David Blondin. He tried to open up a gym in Oxford, I believe it was, in Massachusetts, and he was fined, and there was a threat of him going to jail. You know how that goes. And so one of our local talk show hosts described the case where the governor was going to make an example out of him. They called it David versus Goliath. Actually did call it that, yes. Tom, Lynn, do you have any questions for Gary before we move on?
I have one question.
Go ahead, Lynn.
How did you initially get interested in the sport? How did you get interested in it initially?
All right, going back, like I said, I was lifting weights in my basement, and I was subscribing at that time. There was a couple magazines, Strength and Health and Muscular Development by Bob Hoffman. Bob Hoffman out of York, PA. If you see weights with the name York on them, that comes from York, PA, which is kind of towards center eastern PA, which I've competed at a few times now, where his York Barbell Company is where the Powerlifting Hall of Fame is located. Any case, those magazines got me interested in understanding what the competitive sports were. And the one magazine, Strength and Health, was more devoted to Olympic lifting. Muscular Development was about powerlifting. So just from reading that and doing the list, I knew I was more interested in the powerlifting, you know, aspect of it. And then I mentioned about entering the meet in 1978. My high school, that was actually a high school meet where it was a combination of the bench press meet, and then there was also a bodybuilding contest. So I actually did enter both of them the first year, even though I'm definitely not a bodybuilder. In fact, I think I took a last place on the bodybuilding. But on the bench press, like I said, that got me interested in, even though I completely, you know, screwed up that first meet, but then by going to the gym, then that got me interested in, you know, getting also doing squats and deadlifts in order to enter a full meet. So I entered that bench meet. And then through that, I got to know someone who I ended up rooming with in college. You know, he was also, you know, power lifter because he was, you know, at that same meet. Because it was a high school meet just for like all the local high schools. So there was like 20-some people, I think, that actually competed in the bench meet. You know, so I ended up, you know, they did it by body weight, like how much you lifted percent of body weight. And that's how I ended up taking fourth out of about 20. In my second year, I entered my senior year in college, in high school. But in any case, that got me interested in just the lifting. And then with the guy I met there, Dave, that I roomed with later, we entered full meets together then from there and then on through college. Yeah, but it was just mainly because of lifting weights, you know, myself, and then reading the magazines and finding out about the actual sport of powerlifting that I began competing in.
Okay. Tom, do you have any questions for Gary?
I only have a comment, and that is that I agree with him 110%. Being a former coach and working with youth, that's the one thing we stressed was strength and conditioning. And I agree with him 110%. Mm-hmm. It's an important game. Well, one part of it.
Well, Gary, we hope that you continue doing what you're doing to make yourself fit, because it's very important. You've explained very nicely all of the reasons. Some of them I stated, some of them I didn't, some of them others did and didn't. Why we should continue to be fit, especially now, because of all of the byproducts from this virus that are evolving. You mentioned obesity. That's a good one. Well, it's not a good one, but it's appropriate to the discussion is what I mean. You know, Gary, I really want to thank you. You're welcome to stay.
BB, I have one question before Gary leaves. Gary, do me a favor. Myself at the head of this group of Ignorami, could you explain to us the difference between bodybuilding and strength training?
All right. Bodybuilding is a question of how you look, basically, whereas powerlifting is how much weight you can lift.
Okay.
You know, as a powerlifter, I'm concerned with how much weight is on the bar, and especially at a contest, that's what it's all about. Where a bodybuilder, doesn't matter how much weight they're lifting, they're looking at getting their muscles big and ripped. Mm-hmm. So it's two completely different sports,
okay,
really.
So I guess the simple explanation of the difference would be, correct me if I'm wrong, bodybuilding is more for sort of cosmetics, trying to, you know, snag folks on the beach, whatnot, as opposed to powerlifting is specifically trained toward building muscle strength.
Yeah, building strength specifically on the big three, squat, bench, and deadlift.
Okay.
Now, bodybuilders are incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it, but they're not training to do one rep max. And in fact, they would probably never do a single one training. They're doing like reps, sets of like 8 to 12 reps in that range or more. Whereas powerlifting, I rarely do more than 5-7 reps is the most I would ever do.
So,
you know, I do a lot of lower rep training. It's completely different training.
Okay.
Is the point, because your goals are different. One, you're trying to build muscles that look good, and you're also trying to get shredded down in terms of their body fat in a lot lower. The powerlifter is geared on lifting the most weight for one rep, which is far different than doing a set of 10 reps.
So, Gary,
you know, it's a total difference.
So let's let you crow a little bit. What are your max highs?
We got about 2 minutes for this segment, folks.
All right, just going back to college, let me use those numbers. 123-pound weight class, I squatted 425, bench 240, deadlifted 435.
Nice.
Now, today, at age 59, competing 114-pound weight class, this decade, let's say in my 50s, my best lift is a 331 squat, 180-pound bench, and 401-pound deadlift.
Stupid.
Now, the squat and the deadlift are both all-time world records for the Masters 50 to 59 division.
Wow, nice. Very nice distinction. Very good, Gary.
Gary,
that's
you're very inspirational.
Wow.
You are very inspirational, Gary. I hope that our listeners follow your lead, because this is very, very important. Gary, you're welcome to stay for the rest of the program. I do want to get into some other
things. Right,
there's a lot going on. What I'm going to do is mention briefly in a synopsis what's going on with the major sports, and then I'm going to open it up to discussion wherever you want to talk from. So let's start with baseball. Right now, the owners are in negotiations with the players' union, mostly now about coronavirus protocol. They've tabled the economics for a moment or two. That was a sticky subject. I'm sure that's going to be revisited very shortly.
I don't think they're done dealing with money. I really don't.
Not at all. You've got some players squawking about the fact that they're not going to get paid in full. I think the players are wrong. They have millions of dollars already. What are they doing with their money? God only knows. But I think baseball needs to come to a decision within the next week if they're going to fulfill their plan to start spring training in June and then a regular season in July. If too much time goes by with all these negotiations, we have to table the baseball season, and that's very unfortunate. By the way, before I continue, I did take an independent poll.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
Between the last show and this show. I went on my own. I did not wait for listeners to respond to what we were talking about. I took a poll, and I asked a lot of people whether they wanted sports without fans this year or just table sports altogether. 15 people responded to my independent poll, and here are the results. 12 out of the 15 people want sports without fans. The other three don't want sports at all. So sports without fans, one out, 12-3. Hockey. As of 4:30 this afternoon, Gary Bettman was scheduled to make an announcement about a preliminary plan to have a playoff system with 24 teams instead of the 16. They were going to add 8 more and have some sort of round-robin tournament leading into an actual tournament so that hockey could start up with playoffs. In other words, they wouldn't finish the remaining. NBA, right now, they're looking at similar.
Bob, you're fading
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Bob, you're fading.
You're fading.
Drastically, yeah. I thought it was me.
How am I now?
No.
Yeah, it's not too good, Bob.
All right, someone talk about the NBA, please.
H, you want to take a shot?
It looks like the NBA is going to try to do some sort of playoffs is the latest that I've heard. And people like Jaylen Brown, who were skeptical of this, seem to be coming around that maybe if we do it in one or two spots, they've been talking about Vegas as one way of doing it. And I'm very skeptical of it, but if they can figure out a way to do a shortened playoffs, the one thing I don't want to do, I don't want to make it so that the next season has to start later. Mm-hmm. If they have to do that, then I think they should just not bother to do it. If they can find a way to do it and not have to start the season later, then, you know, maybe we'll see.
You know, I think the tough aspect for both hockey and basketball where they deal in closed arena type situations is that they have to find a way to get participation in either, you know, no fans at all, which sounds if they're going to start soon so that they can begin the next season on time or close to on time, they're going to have to either get full approval from each of the respective governors of all the states that have professional teams in their respective cities, which also means the local mayors and municipal heads for each venue as well, or, you know, they're going to have to find one central location in anybody else
right.
who cares to chime in order to, you know, hold a complete venue or maybe two venues, east and west or something like that.
You know, as much as we all agree, for example, that the baseball players ought not be whining about money, the one beef maybe that they do have, if anything, is, you know, worried about getting the infection and getting the virus And that goes for any of these guys that are going to play any of these sports. If you have too many people that are worried about getting the virus, then that starts making me think that they shouldn't be doing it, you know.
Well, that's been my stand on this for a while. From what I'm reading, I came across a couple articles today, and I just heard part of an interview before we went on. Where they're talking about that very thing, you know, the chance of getting the virus, the chance of becoming ill in this kind of environment. Now, the thing that I find so interesting with this, talking about baseball, this report came out yesterday. It could be decided in the next week to fade a Major League Baseball. The reps from both sides are negotiating player safety guidelines. It could be reviewing the financial proposal presented by baseball owners as early as today. Both sides should try to get this. You want to try to get the season started around the 4th of July. You know, again, multiple target issues, social distancing, widespread testing, game protocols. Those are the kind of things the players are thinking about right now. The other thing I'm looking at with this is the unavailability of some tools, such as hydrotherapy. That's not going to be available. If that's working for an injury of a player, is it going to be feasible for him to be playing and not receiving the hydrotherapy when he needs it? So we've got a lot of questions here that don't have a firm answer.
Is the hydrotherapy really that risky, Tom, that they need to ban it?
Well, again, it's equipment, it's water. You know, whether or not it's risky, I don't know. I'm not a specialist in the field. But my hunch is generally the water temperature and whatnot is going to take care of it, but they're erring on the side of caution, which I understand that.
Wouldn't hydrotherapy work in any sport?
It can. But the risk is here, I don't care what the sport is, right now baseball is talking about not having hydrotherapy available because of the, quote, risk, unquote. It's not going to be available. So, you know, what's that going to do to the player? Major League Baseball Player Association is balking at the financial end of it. They're suspecting owners are expected to submit financial data to players to assuage fears that additional pay cuts would unfairly impact players. Now, we're talking revenue share. What revenue are they going to share?
TV revenue, perhaps.
Television.
Yeah, that's the
TV.
That might be about it.
TV.
But is that going to be enough? See, what the players are afraid of, if you allow revenue sharing now, what the players are afraid of, this is going to result in a salary cap. And I'm going, hip, hip, hooray, let's go, baby.
You got it, Thomas. You got it.
I have been promoting salary caps for over 35 years now for baseball.
Good.
I'm glad to see it being a slim possibility, but the players don't want that.
Yeah.
Because that means their contracts won't be as big. That means
it never happen.
Form and whatnot. Well, that's my fear.
Yeah, that may just can the whole season, Lynn.
The other article I came across today, and this is the one that's got me curious, is coming from the head physician of the New York Yankees. The team physician, Dr. Chris Ahmed, a renowned surgeon with 20 years of experience, thinks one of the consequences of MLB's longer than anticipated layoff could be a wicked surge in Tommy John surgery. Elbows injuries that lead to Tommy John reconstructive surgery are most prevalent during spring training and stem from a variety of factors. Include the sudden start of play, rigid competition intensity, lack of early season physical conditioning, lower preparation coming off season, and not yet fully optimized throwing mechanics. And playing with elbow pain.
There's already a surge in Tommy John surgeries, actually.
And there is. And as I have said repeatedly on this program,
yep,
that is my biggest concern. I don't care, as a coach, I don't care how good you think you are. If you're not conditioned properly, that good is not going to last long enough to put you out there on the mound. It just isn't going to happen because there's going to be injuries. His doctor says
we're hearing some noise. We've got to stop that
going
noise,
on.
Please.
If somebody could mute who's clattering,
stop the noise, please.
Yeah.
Enormous enthusiasm for baseball's return could be dangerous for pitchers. They've been unable to keep up with the usual fitness regimen during quarantine. Condensed schedules, fewer days of rest make up for lost time, also present a challenge. While Ahmad worries about mechanical flaws usually ironed out in spring training could go unaddressed. Maximum effort throwing could put pitchers in a compromised position. Mm. This has been what I've been saying for the last 3 or 4 weeks on this show. You can't just run into baseball right now, because you're risking every single player out there. I don't care what the position, pitchers in particular.
So, Coach, I'll start with you on this then. What kind of a window do you think from this point forward that is there in order for baseball to begin? In your opinion, what would you say would be a cutoff time where they shouldn't even bother to move forward this year?
I think we passed it. Personally, I think we passed it. I believe these players, particularly pitchers, need a good 8 to 12 weeks of conditioning, because you can't just go running into this conditioning and get your body back into shape.
So we're talking 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, at least. Okay. Because you can't go just jump into training and expect it to happen. You've got to ease your way into it to prevent further to prevent injuries.
Well, what do pitchers normally do during their off seasons without a pandemic? Where do they train?
Some of them train at home. Some of them go to the gym. Some of them even go to the team's facilities. All of that's been shut down except home gyms. However, home gyms don't have the same equipment because of size requirements, space and whatnot that really give you the complete workout. The other side of this that is key, you have trainers that are available to help you get trained properly. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how long you've been doing this. There comes a point where if you're trying to train yourself, you're going to make mistakes and you can do more damage than good. Mm-hmm. You know, the highest number of receiving Tommy John surgery right now are baseball pitchers, typically high school and college pitchers from the South because they play year round. I love this sport. I've got to keep going. I've got to keep going. Well, the problem is what's happening is they're throwing so much at a young age that they're doing tremendous damage to that elbow because it's still forming. It's still growing. The muscles, the tendons, the bones are still developing. And you're going to run into the same problem right here with this because you're trying to train by doing your job, and that's not the way to do it.
BB, now, so you and I seem to be the biggest proponents of a resumption in sports as soon as and as safely as possible. What do you think about Tom's comments? Do you think they should can baseball? Do you think they should try to keep muddling forward to see what they come up with?
Well, here's my reaction. If the owners and players don't know what Tom knows, then there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they continuing to plan it with negotiations? They're the ones that are supposed to know all these.
Well, yeah, and you know what? They have
because
the biggest.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money. What else? It's money,
that's
money, money.
But Lynn, that could
it's
work.
It's all about the money. That's all.
Lynn, that could work though against the owners if they push too hard because with all these contracts that, these owners have vested in, you know, these big, huge, fat contracts with these few superstar players, pitchers especially, Tom, we're kind of on the subject of pitcher vulnerability if they're not trained correctly, having the potentially most adverse effect on them. Don't you think that the owners are also aware of the financial investment that they're playing with?
Here. But the overriding,
I mean, I've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks. Can it? Ask me next week. I'm going to say the same thing. Can it?
Tom, what were you going
to
say?
The thing of it that we have to realize is that the predominant common denominator in this is the money.
Yeah.
The owners are whining because, oh, my God, MLB is going to lose $4 billion if we don't play. Well, sucks to be you, don't it? I'd rather lose $4 billion now than lose out on a major contract to one of my star pitchers because he came into the season and ended up getting severely injured, having to go through Tommy John surgery and losing him for 18 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what if, and this is maybe not as likely, but what if a couple of players got the COVID and one or two of them had to go on a ventilator and maybe we actually lost a couple of players?
Exactly.
I mean,
these are the things we have to think. And I know as fans, I'll be the first one to tell you, I want to see baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But
we all do.
I will also be the first one to tell you that I want to see baseball the way it is meant to be.
There we go. That's
not the way
saying.
We want to design it to get around a situation.
That's what I think.
I fell in love with the sport for the sport because of the way it was played, because of the competition, because of the variables involved.
Now, Tom and Lynn, both, do you feel the same way about the other three as well?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
I feel the same way about all.
Well, you may get your wish with football because it looks like football's going gung-ho. Did you hear the latest about football? They plan to open training camps in late June.
Well, no, then Tom wouldn't be getting his wish.
Well, no, he'd get his wish about having the sport as he wants it because it looks like football is going to go gung-ho.
I think they're planning on no fans. Though.
Yeah, maybe 25% or something.
No fans, Tom, is no fans a part of what you don't want?
That's a lot of what I don't. Yeah, for me it is.
I miss part the bands. I think it does. And again,
part of it. Yes.
I'm going to go back to what I said a couple of weeks ago. The lack of fans is going to produce its own set of problems. When you don't have your fans out there cheering you on, you lose something as a player, and I dare say you lose something as a coach in your competitiveness, your awareness, and knowing what's going on that field. A week or two, it might be all right. But if that's game after game after game after game, you're going to get to a point where who the hell cares? Nobody's here to see us.
There are big leaders. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, if I could interject on that, it said as competitive powerlifting. At a contest, I definitely feed off of the crowd. You know, there's no doubt. I mean, when I'm actually in the zone, when I'm actually doing the lift, I can't hear the crowd. But as I'm getting psyched up before the lift, I'm fully aware of the crowd. And then afterwards, I mean, I'm a lifter. I get pretty, should I say, flamboyant on the platform. Yep. You know, and I'm, like, just feeding into the crowd personally. That's why, though, I said that, you know, we could hold a meet without a crowd, without an audience, although we could do it. It would really change the whole atmosphere of the meet. Because, like I said, I literally play to the crowd. I just take on a whole different persona whenever I'm competing.
On that line, Gary, had there been any meets where a meet was held without a crowd?
Not complete with that. There's been a few meets I've been at where there's only like a handful of people there, and it's a different atmosphere. I don't like the one there's a small crowd. I mentioned about competing in York, PA. There's where you have the largest crowd of like a couple hundred people, and I really feed into it. I'm real flamboyant. It just kind of just changes the whole tone, whereas when there isn't a crowd, I train by myself, so I can do it. I can get psyched up without it, but it is a completely different atmosphere. And I think you're right. If you're talking about baseball where you're playing almost every day without a crowd, I think you are right. You are going to get to the point of what's the point type of thing.
And like I say, when we're talking professional sports, I don't think it's just baseball. I think it's going to affect everybody. The only one that may not be affected quite so much is NASCAR. But I think even still, we're going to see some effect there eventually.
Yeah, even after the first race there, I watched like just the ending of the first race last week when I think it was Havnick. Mm-hmm. I remember when he won, that was the first thing he said. You know, at the winner's circle when he got out of his car, is normally there'd be fans screaming right now. And yep. This just isn't right. You know, you could see almost a disappointment in him that he won this big race and nobody's cheering for him.
People don't realize the amount of enthusiasm the fans have directly results in the amount of enthusiasm the players have for the game. And without that, you're going to see a totally different game eventually. It's going to make a difference.
Well, folks, I'll tell you this. I'm going to drop some water on everybody. Epidemiologists, biologists are now coming forward, and they're saying, theoretically at this point, there's a possibility we may not ever get a vaccine to this highly mutatable virus.
Yep.
It's being talked about in a low-keyed way right now, and let's hope it's just talk and it ends up to be in our rearview mirror in 6 to 10 months or whatever. But this could be our new reality for a long time if this thing persists. And so we either go for an indefinite period under those conditions, Tom and Lynn, without sports, or, you know, we just figure out a way to make mechanical devices out on fields and get used to something else, or we have to become a bit courageous and do some experimenting and power our way through it and take chances at times and hope for the best.
I don't have the stomach for it.
Or is one more out, and this will get Tom going before we close. Esports.
No.
Yeah, baby.
No.
That's not even a sport.
That produces nausea.
Oh, God. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree.
To me, to me, the thing I'm looking at here is, as much as I want sports, as much as I want to sit down on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, watch a ball game with my lady, cheer on my team, and whatnot, as much as I want that more than anything else, I'm sitting back here and I'm looking at how much risk are we willing to put the people we root for, the players we love, how much risk are we willing to put them in, unknowingly put them in, just for the sake of 2 hours or three?
Well, here's the thing, Coach, and I say this right. I say this with the highest respect to you, Tom. I value your opinion as much as everybody else here does. But here's the problem, or here's the variable that we need to also think about. You put the sport out there as owners, right, as coordinators, as promoters, and then you let the fans decide whether they want to come and take that risk or not, right?
Yeah, but what I'm talking about, Al, is how much risk are we putting our players under?
Well, that's their choice, Tom, right?
It's to a point.
Well, so okay.
How informed of a choice is it, though? I mean,
that's my point right
how
there.
How informed of a choice is it?
I think
in this days of unknown
up,
and
yeah, we got to pick this up. This is a great way. Make a note of this, because this is a great discussion for next time. I'm sure we all have thoughts, but anyway, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody, especially Gary Ziola, for taking time
Absolutely.
To come on the show. Thank you, Gary. You
yes.
talked about
thank
our very
you.
Important subject. And who knows, maybe we'll have you back sometime soon.
Love to, yeah.
For the rest of you, thank you again for a wonderful show. It was very interesting. So you have yourself a safe and blessed week, everybody.
Take care, everybody, and go safe. Right. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. Take care.